Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from. Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, I've got a good one for you. I just got done recording with Greg McHale from Wild Yukon. We discussed everything from his adventure races to life in the Yukon, moose hunting, sheep hunting, and a lot of raising boys or raising kids. And even if you're not a father, mother, I think there's definitely something here to learn from being a mentor standpoint. Or a uncle or aunt. I think there's some really good life lessons there. Definitely a challenging and a motivating thing. Definitely humbling. I feel like I take my kids outside, but man, it's definitely a humbling experience to see what other people are doing. And unfortunately, I went into this interview a little unprepared with looking into the interviewee and who I was interviewing. And it's so crazy to think there's so many people out there that have these amazing stories. And I ran upstairs after recording and said, just a smile on my face. And my wife asked how it went. And I said, it's great. There's just so many wonderful people in the circle of the hunting world. And I love chatting and connecting with them. And it's fun. And this doesn't have to be, this is fun for me. But when you get connected with somebody, whether that's another hunter, another listener of some sort, and you hear their story and what they get passionate about, it's really cool to hear those stories. So this is one of those for me. I enjoyed it. I loved it. And go check his stuff out. www.moosehuntgiveaway.com. Check that out. And then also and go to my Instagram, and you'll be able to find that there. You'll be able to check out Greg's stuff, Waypoint, Carbon TV, YouTube, and all that sort of thing. So great episode with Greg, and I'm excited to share that with you. Too bad I had to wait after recording that to get it out, just because I had others in the queue. So enjoy again. And again, if you wouldn't mind, if you would follow, like, subscribe wherever you listen. Thanks. All right, Greg, thanks for joining me on the podcast. And we just got to know each other, just barely. And so we're going to continue down that pathway, learn a little bit about each other. So why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, and we'll get started talking about hunting in Alaska.
Yeah, Clint. Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And yeah, understanding or learning a little bit about your really your education background, and have the education that you're giving to people now, and the ability to be able to go out and teach new people how to hunt, and fish, that's pretty awesome. So I think the industry should be thanking guys like you for bringing more people in. So thanks for having me on. My name is Greg McHale, and I live up in the Yukon, which next to Alaska. So yeah, I spent my better part of my life up here now, and hunting is a huge part of that. It's just been the Yukon, and the north is a pretty amazing place to live, and more of a spectacular place to hunt. So yeah, again, thank you for having me.
Yeah. I said Alaska. I meant Yukon. Am I? Yep.
And yeah. We're cousins.
Yep.
We're cousins.
And I should know your podcast called Wild Yukon, correct?
Well, the television show.
Television show. Okay. I'm so ignorant on this. You got to catch me up. So, but you're,
it's all good.
Yeah, you got a podcast as well. So little plug.
Negative. No podcast.
No. Okay. No. Then we're just connecting through Waypoint. All right.
We are connecting through Waypoint.
Okay, right. Perfect. On the other side, the TV side.
So my television show is now on Waypoint, and I think that's where the connection is.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. So what is your fall looking like? What do you got planned so far?
Well, generally speaking, everything starts August 1, and it's the 3 months of hunting is really 90% of my hunting season. So everything starts off for me with sheep. Sheep hunting is just what I live for when it comes to hunting. So everything is built around sheep season. And after sheep season, I generally call that kind of mid-September. So I get anywhere from, 3 to 6 weeks of sheep hunting. I shouldn't say that because at the end, often I've done a number of, late season sheep hunts, but yeah, that's what it's about. And then I get into moose after sheep and caribou and goats. And so, yeah, we really try to tick off as many boxes a year as I can. And it's my thing is big game mountain hunting is kind of where I've found my home and where I love to spend most of my time is in the mountains.
Yeah. And I'm missing a piece here. Tell us a little bit about your background, kind of what you've done, what it took to get you here.
Yeah. Try to give you the quick rundown. Grew up in Ontario, which is 6,000 kilometers, like 4,000 miles from here. I couldn't have moved any further away and still lived in my same country. So it was post-university. As soon as I graduated, my girlfriend at the time, which is my wife now, her and I packed up her Plymouth Sundance and we moved to the Yukon, never to return to Ontario. And it's been an amazing journey. And we left the center of Canada to pursue the wilderness and adventure. I spent the majority, I spent from the moment that I got here, it was about finding, the adventure in and through hunting. So one of my first jobs in the Yukon was a packer for a guy or an outfitter in Northwest Territories right on the Yukon border. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth in the hunting world, in the big game hunting world, other than what I grew up with, birds and whitetail back home. And I've spent, the last 26 years, 25 years, whatever it is now, just pounding around the mountains and making a life of it. I wouldn't say that I've been in the hunting industry my whole life. I've guided off and on, and I was a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police for a period of time. And I left that to pursue business interests, and which then evolved into a production company and filming our own hunts. So now it's that's what I do. Is I am fortunate enough to run around the hills, and I'm a pilot, so I get to fly all over the Yukon and just explore these amazing wilderness that we have here. Like in the Yukon, I believe it's similar size or maybe just a touch smaller than Texas. And, we have 35,000 people, and the rest is just wilderness and mountains and rivers and wildlife. And there's no better place in the planet to hunt big game, in my opinion, just by virtue of the fact that we have very limited population. So it's been a great journey. It's been an amazing life, and it's a long way from over.
And expansive territory, I'm assuming. I haven't been in that country, but you look on a map, it's huge. It's got to be just expansive, and access, I'm assuming, is quite hard to get to.
Yeah, we basically have, three highways that run through this whole territory. And, obviously small minor roads might branch off of that, but the beautiful thing for me is the aircraft. and the ability to get into places that just nobody sees. And nobody, you know, with the exception of maybe outfitters in that area, but it's, yeah, it's just big, big country with big mountains and huge valleys. And just, it's a playground.
That's a life we all can't live. As you say that, I just think about that. And we, many hunters, I'm not going to say all, because many people love to sit in their tree stands, which is great. That are a couple hundred yards from the truck, totally fine. That's still hunting, and you're a part of that part of the same community, just do it a little differently. But it's a different lifestyle that, or hunting lifestyle, we'll say, that is for many people, many of our listeners, even Coloradans, who are a majority of my listeners, it's hard to fathom sometimes and you see all the time on shows like yours of that plane flies away and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, I've never done that, but I'm just watching and seeing, kind of realizing that same sort of thing that when I'm in our backcountry, I feel that small, I feel the danger. I feel that little bit of, oh crap, home's a long ways away and it's going to take me a long time to get there. I'm a family man, so it's hard to be away from home for me sometimes. Even though it's just a few days, it's hard for me to be away because I feel like I'm helpless. I can't help them if something happens or whatnot. So, that big country is it's intimidating.
I think that you know, that feeling of helplessness that you can't be there to solve the problems is almost, for me, it's almost a way of life because, and then, you know, you prepare your family and you prepare everyone around you, for this lifestyle. And I think that when you live in a place like this, it is a lifestyle. It's not something that you choose. It's just, this is the way it is. Unless you can live in the city, which is, you know, 30,000 people or whatever it is, you can live there and not go out into the wilderness. But, you know, for me, and it's always been that way from the time, you know, my wife and I first moved here, is I was into mountaineering. I would go away on 3-week mountaineering trips and climbing McKinley and Mount Logan and like the highest mountains in North America. And so it's just what we do. And my wife is a tremendous athlete, and her and I have raced together all over the world, adventure racing. We did that professionally for about 10 years. So we understand it's just part of our life. And I get what you mean when you say like that you can't help them, and you can't. When you're back in the wilderness here, and you know, there's no cell service. There's inReach and there's sat phones and stuff like that. But you know, even here's an example of one of my, Dave, our camera guy, we were on a bison hunt and his wife went into labor, I think it was 6 or 8 weeks early. And we had planned, you know, the season, okay, this hunt, we're going to have lots of time. And, you know, we had taken dog team back into, you know, the middle of nowhere, and it's minus 30. And we get an inReach message or, saying that, Dave, you know, needs to get out. And then shortly thereafter, we get another message that, you know, she's already on an airplane heading to Vancouver. Like, there is nothing you can do. You can't come out of this country, like, just, you know, when you want to leave. And it took us 2 days to get, you know, to get Dave out to a road. And that's just part of, you know, everything turned out great. Beautiful baby girl, everything. And, you know, he got down there 2 days after that. So he couldn't just get out of the Yukon either. So yeah. this is a way of life up here. And, it's, you just accept it. And it's what makes it special that not at any moment you just cannot be reached. And when I go into the bush in August, you know, for weeks, some, you know, months at a time, I'm kind of not completely off the grid, but you know, I'm about as off the grid as you can possibly get. And that's kind of the beautiful thing about it too. You know, you can't help your, if something goes wrong, yeah, you can't help, but hopefully you prepared the people or in your life that they can handle these things, and this, the community chips in. It's just a, it's a different way of life up here. And I think that everyone could have an opportunity to experience it by coming into a place like here or Alaska, or, you know, just getting off the grid where, and just to see whether you like it or not, because it's not for everybody.
Sure.
It's not for every hunter.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I realize that for most of us in the lower 48 here in the US, where sheep hunting is off the table for most, and it's something that is almost unattainable, either financially or just ability to draw tags. That's the majority of it. And that alone in your kind of country is what freaks me out. the steepness and the terrain, that part I think would get me. But more so, I want to ask you a question, just because your adventure races, I know that those are, what are they, 50 or 100K? I mean, I know there's a few different ones. What are they?
Yeah, well, most of the adventure racing that we did was what they call expedition style racing. From 400 to 1,000 kilometer nonstop races.
Oh my gosh. That's unfathomable. That's incredible that you're able to do those. That's amazing. So you understand that separation right there, are you doing that with somebody?
Yeah. So Okay. Generally speaking, adventure racing is, comprised of four teammates, and you start together and you have to finish the race together. If you drop somebody or if somebody gets injured, your race is over. So yeah, the team aspect, I believe that it's the most difficult sport on the planet, and this sport requires the highest level of teamwork than any other sport out there, because the courses are, you know, they take days and days to complete, and you do it on next to no sleep, and you're doing multiple disciplines, from paddling, kayaks, to, you know, mountain biking, to trekking, and all map and compass navigation, no GPSs. It's all old school, just human powered. And you get the race course typically the day before the race starts, and you have to map out the checkpoints that you must hit. And it's an unbelievably difficult sport, both mentally and physically. And I was fortunate that the sharpest end of the adventure racing world, it's, the teams are co-ed. So you must have at least one male or one female on every team. And it just so happens that my wife is an amazing athlete, and we started this adventure racing journey together. And, you know, we raced for some of the best teams in the world and best teams in the United States and Canada and Europe during our career. So we were fortunate to be able to travel all over the world together and just have these amazing experiences. So yeah, it's an amazing sport. It's not for everybody. It's so demanding on, you know, all fronts that it tests you, and you'll find out who you are real quick. And everybody else in your team will find out who you are real quick as well.
Right. And I can already tell, and just in the short amount of time here, the mental toughness, the physical toughness is required. For sure. Either the hunts, the adventure race, whatever. There is absolutely some incredible mental and physical toughness there. And I know that some of the folks down here, hunters, really struggle sometimes with, back to that fear again of being alone, or fear of the unknown, or just fear of whatever. How do you deal with feelings like that? Or
I I really don't anymore, but that's just because of years of chasing it. I think that I chased the fears so that I could overcome them. Certainly part of those things that were going to be challenging, that were scary, that was part of it that makes it exciting for me. And I know that same thing is what makes it nerve-wracking for others, that they would never even, you know, go there. But I know that when you chase your fears, when you go beyond where you thought you could go, that's where the zest in life actually is. Hmm. And when I'm sitting out, like I flew out to, we have a cabin in the mountains, and I just took my two kids out there this past weekend. And, you know, you shut the airplane off and there's just you, and you have two little people that, you know, require you to survive.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, if I died, they could probably walk their way out to civilization. Mm-hmm. They could do it, but at 7 and 9 years old. But, you know, you shut that plane down and it's just you and them in the middle of nowhere. And I think I've grown to have that experience of itself when I'm sitting there looking at the mountains. It just makes me, the one thing that comes to my mind is that this is what life is about. Life is right at this very moment. And I just require that wilderness and the challenge and the get away from everybody. And I think that's, you know, when I look back on my career of adventure racing or mountaineering or, you know, hunting now, it's about facing those fears and going all in to make sure that, you know who you are and you know what you can handle when stuff is really bad, that you can just deal with it because you've dealt with way harder in the past. That's how I look at life.
Hmm. No, I like that approach. And as you're saying that, I'm trying to picture, make this relatable to me and my hunts. And I'm trying to think of, where was I pushing myself? Was I afraid in any of these moments, and how was I dealing with this? And I seem to have a pretty level temperament anyway, where I don't freak out about things. Like you said, you just deal with it. I was on a lake last night in my little POS 16-foot aluminum boat for the first time, and with my 4-year-old. And here comes the thunderstorm rolling in, and that motorboat or that little motor is not completely reliable. Had about 30 seconds of freak out for a little bit of, okay, start this thing. I know how to start this thing. And then buzz on back for it. But I had that same thought process. So of, I'm in charge of this little guy, and he has to get home, and he can't do that on his own. He's 4. Yeah. He can't.
Yeah.
How do I raise him to be able to do that and be comfortable with it? And so I'm just using what you're saying, because there's so many different things. I'd love to take this, but I'm seeing another little avenue here I'd like to ask you about. It's just, what have you done with your 7 and 9 year old to train them up on that? And obviously time in at the cabin in the woods does it, but what are the conversations like that you have with your kids that are training them for those survival situations?
Yeah. When we're at the cabin, per, you know, say, cause we often, you know, try to get out there when we can. And it's conversations like, okay, what, you know, just teaching them, just asking them questions and teaching them as you go along, like, okay, what way is north? What direction, you know, would you go if you had to walk out of here? And, you know, what side of the river would you walk down, and how would you know that you're traveling in the same direction? All of these things. And then, you know, when they give answers, right or wrong, you know, you, if it's wrong, you know, you correct them and you talk. And, one, one of the things we do, especially in that particular situation, is that instead of flying in sometimes, or, you know, actually a couple of years ago, so my daughter was 4 and my son would have been 6. We, instead of flying in, we took a boat and then we hiked in, and it's like 5 mile bush bash, from this lake to the lake that our cabin is on. And, you know, just having them have those experiences, those difficult journeys, and putting them in difficult situations, so it becomes normal. Like that's what I do to my kids all the time.
Right.
Like I build a rink in the backyard, and at -20 to -30, we're outside on the rink in the wintertime. You know, it's cold. It's, you know, just putting them in physically challenging situations and then seeing how they deal with it mentally, and then correcting them along the way. And I do a pile of positive talk, as far as like, you can do this, you've got this. Look at your mom and I, we didn't know how to do these things, and we learned, and that's how we grow. And that's how we learn how to deal with difficult situations. So whether it's, you know, really it's preparing them, not necessarily the physical things aren't going to be difficult because they're already very, you know, they've had a lot of years. It's going to be, you know, dealing with, kind of the busyness of life, I think, is going to be where a lot of kids are challenged, because kids are way tougher than we give them credit for. Like, way tougher than we give them credit for. We are the problem. And certainly, I don't know how old you are, Clint, but my generation, like this 40 to 50 year olds, we're the worst. This helicopter parent crap. Like, Oh, you know, Johnny can't swing on the monkey bars because he's going to fall off and get hurt. Like, come on. It's the worst thing you can do. Like,
right.
Especially little boys, need to break stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they need to, you know, skin their knees and their elbows and get in fights, and, you know, but we're just in a, we're in a world that right now that, and I'm going off on a tangent, but, you know, when it comes to children and, you know, raising kids, I'm super passionate about providing your kids with all of the tools to be successful in every aspect of life. You know, if they sit and play video games and they don't interact with people and they don't, you know, get hurt and they're not out being physical, then they're pigeonholed into one direction, that's city life and, you know, sitting on a computer and probably at a desk in a cubicle. You know, that's where my brain goes, where I would love for my kids to, if that's what they chose to do, that's a choice that they have, but they have so many other options that they could explore because they've been inundated with all of these different things in their life. And now they have options. That's my goal.
I'm in my mid-30s and 4-year-old and a 3-month-old. So the conversations are really starting to ramp up with that 4-year-old on what it is that we're doing and how we're doing it. And it's a fun challenge. And I really analyze myself as a father of like, how am I raising this kid? Mm-hmm. How I think all the time of how do I make him tougher? How do I teach him to be an outdoor kid? And in this world, it's very easy to be inside all the time. And I think you give some advice there that, and how you approach that, that is not what I've heard elsewhere. So I think that's helpful.
I think the superpower for our young kids now is going to be the being outside and being, you know, not being afraid to go and explore. Mm-hmm. And because I don't know if you live in the city or not, but if you're a city kid and you get out to the wilderness and you've never been taught those kind of things, you will be afraid. Like, it's bears and it's all these other, you know, whatever, mountain lions or whatever it is. There's always something to be afraid of. And I don't teach my kids to be afraid of those kind of things. Don't be afraid of bears. like you live in, you know, you can have a healthy respect for bears, and this, these are the things that you need to do, but to don't be afraid of them, because then you won't go into those, you know, and right. have these amazing experiences. If your fear holds you back, like a healthy fear is great, but one that holds you back is not a healthy fear. So therefore, educate yourself in whatever it is, and, you know, go out and have those experiences. And by us as parents, we are the problem, because we portray our fears onto our children, and then they pick that up.
Oh, that's the truth. That's the absolute truth. And it's happening right now as a 4-year-old, and I can see it.
Yeah.
When we walk through the Omaha and Nebraska Zoo, and just the things he's seen and absorbed from everywhere is, this is scary, this is not. And yeah. we had that conversation through the entire zoo. No, they're not that scary. No, they're not that scary. Like, we stay away from rattlesnakes. We went to a rattlesnake training class for my dog, because I wanted my dog to not get bit by a snake or go get smacked in the face, because it goes and sniffs it. So I brought my, at the time, 3-year-old, so he could hear that rattle. And now we're working on, what is that sound? When you go out to your playground, we gotta check for snakes first. That's the first thing we gotta do, is we gotta kick the slide. We gotta look in the sandbox, make sure there's no snakes. And so far he's been just jumping right in there, but there's a few areas. I'm really glad you said this, and it'd be nice if my wife listened to my own podcast once in a while. These are my thoughts, and I haven't been able to get them out. So
So your son is 4 years old, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Like, it is your job to raise a man.
Right.
Your wife is not going to raise a man.
No.
She's not. She can't. And it's a damn good thing she can't.
Uh-huh.
Right. She can raise a daughter. I guarantee you that, but she cannot raise a man. Your job is to raise a man that is going to protect his wife and his family. And that's what we are losing in society now. See, I get revved up about this, because this is one thing that, like, my job as a parent now, I've had an amazing life, and I'm going to continue to have an amazing life. But my job right now, for this finite period of time, is my job is to raise a family, obviously, but to raise a man that will protect his family when he has his own, right? So he has to have the tools that his mom can't teach him. His dad has to teach him, just like my daughter. I can't teach my daughter how to be a woman.
Right. Okay? Right.
How to nurture, how to be like, I can't. And it's not as, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about having two parents. And obviously, you know, I'm passionate about having two parents that are active in a family. And obviously, if you can raise the best parents, you know, the best families, and people are going to kill me for saying this, but I believe that a husband and a wife raising their children together is going to provide, you know, the optimum growth for that child.
Sure.
So
no, that's,
so again,
yeah,
your job with your son is to teach him to be a man, and that's it.
I like it. No, that's pretty straight to the point and humbling. And I tell you what, going back to the helicopter parent piece, is I didn't think it'd be as hard as it is. It's hard, and I let go, but man, I don't want my kid to get bit by a snake. that's my concern. I've taken my kid in my backpack, and I've been out where I probably shouldn't have been taking him, but he was fine and I was in control, and he's up on my back as a little kid, pointing out rubs and poop and whatever else, and having those adventures. And one of my favorite things to do is when that little kid is on your back and he's chirping about this and that in your ear, And I'm going to miss that with my 4-year-old because he's getting to that point where he's got to start walking. And and the 3-month-old, he can't do much more than blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right. Well, I got to, so I'm interested in when you say that you had him on your back in places that you probably shouldn't have. What, like, can you paint me a scenario where that makes, that we're, yeah,
it doesn't right, make right. sense so, to me, but. That the when what I mean by that is the places where the common person would say you shouldn't be taking the helicopter parent, just like you're saying, your generation and in my generation very much so, the taking them where it's not safe necessarily, but it is. Like, I am trained. I am
because you're there.
I know what I'm doing. If we have inclement weather, I'm ready. I have the tools. I have the knowledge. I'm comfortable. And it's taking a little 2-year-old at the time miles in. And that's not like a long, long ways in, but it's far enough that it just stretches my comfort. And I'm sure would stretch a city person's extreme comfort just by themselves, let alone with a kid.
See, there lies the problem, is that I think that, so you know, you have the ability to deal with whatever comes up. Your comfort in the backcountry is, you know, obviously it's great. You have your 2-year-old on your back. And our problem in society lies in that the helicopter parent is portraying their fears and their belief of what is right and what is wrong based on their ability. Their ability is nothing close to what yours is, but yet we still almost take their opinion into some sort of consideration. And that's the problem, is that you've got your 2-year-old on your back and you're completely competent, and they might not like that. It's because they don't have the ability to do that, and they would never be comfortable enough doing that. And that gets portrayed on us, and that sucks. See, like, because I remember traveling in Argentina, and our son was, maybe he was like 3 months old, and we were backpacking in the just beautiful Patagonia, and like, there's nobody around, and you know, it's snowing out and we're in a tent, and you know, but these are the things that we, and that's just normal for us. Hmm. So when you say, you know, I know exactly what you mean, but the problem is that those helicopter parents living in the city, they have an opinion of us who spend so much time outdoors, and it's just a part of our, of who we are and what we do. And they are allowed to have an opinion. And I think that that's just crap. And I don't buy into it at all, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
And the helicopter parent, there's many of them that do look up to your style of parenting, and I believe that they wish that they could do that. I'm sure they could, but I am not at your level there either. I've got my limits, and I look up to that. I look up to that confidence that my kid and I can go and we can do this. And it makes me want to go yank my kid out of bed right now and go camping. Wake up. We're going. We got to sleep in the tent tonight. There's a thunderstorm coming. I don't care. Makes me want to go do that.
Yeah. Well, thanks. But like, and don't misconstrue that. Like, I mean, we all have these thoughts, right? Like, we all, you know, when your kid is, you know, when they're testing themselves, your natural instinct is to protect. But I believe that as fathers, we have to, you know, we have to beat that natural instinct down especially with our boys. And some people would say I'm being sexist just for saying that. But I mean, I know boys, right? I know men.
Right.
And so that's, I can speak educatedly to that, I feel. It's really just getting all of us, like men, we need to get out of our comfort zone more. Because if you don't get out of your comfort zone, how are you ever going to try to teach a child to get out of theirs? Like, Mm-hmm. Like your kids, kids are super smart and they see everything that's going on. And if you come home from work, you sit in front of the television and, you know, you drink a beer or whatever it is every night, and that's your normal operating procedure, that becomes normalized for them. And that shouldn't be normalized. Mm-hmm. I don't believe. Sure, there's time to, you know, to relax and these kind of things. But, you know, I try to, and I'm not perfect at it, but I try to spend as much time as I can with my kids. Because what I'm realizing at 9 years old, my son and my daughter at seven, is that time flies. And I know that every parent that is, you know, their kids are out of the house will tell you the same thing. And, but time does fly and every moment is important. I feel, and, it's just, I'm in the business of building the little, I'm building good humans, number one. And, with my son, I'm in the business of building men, or a little man. And, my daughter, of, you know, giving her everything that she needs to be successful, and let my wife take my wife take the lead on her.
Well, that's awesome. But yet she's an outdoors woman. She's
said that, I mean, yeah. She gets every opportunity that my son does. So like my son has been on two sheep hunts now. His first one was when he was seven. 8 years old, and now this will be his third. We got two rams with my father, and my daughter. It's she's almost there. So, you know, as a family, we have to go out on. You have to obtain a certain level of continuation while hunt for the hunt. So say for a sheep hunt, if I'm going to take my son, it's like, okay, we need to be able to do this. We got to be able to climb this mountain, and you got to do it without whining. That's my baseline. So, you know, now my daughter is, she's there. She's super athletic and she's very tough and strong willed. And she's almost ready to take on a sheep hunt. So, I mean, wow. Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, that's a good transition into a different sort of topic, just sheep hunting.
Boat Trader is America's largest boating marketplace with over 100,000 boats to choose from. We offer simple, comprehensive solutions for those looking to sell, find, and finance new or used boats. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations, and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Are you focusing mainly, is it mostly all dull up there, or do you get the opportunity to go after stone as well?
Yeah, generally, we have way more dall sheep than we do stones. Mm-hmm. In the Yukon, you know, the opportunity to sheep hunt is about as good as it gets anywhere in the world. Like over the counter, we get a sheep tag for $10, and you can get out and, you know, chase sheep for 3 months. So
and we pay $50,000 to come shoot a stone.
Yeah, well, that's it for me. Like I had the writing was on the wall for me. I had to do one of three things: is either win the lottery or move out here and become a resident, or, you know, the third one would have been have to, you know, win the other lottery, not just the monetary one,
right?
The sheep tag lottery.
Yeah, exactly. So is there, I know stone is what it is. Nobody's found a great way to do that for an affordable amount, unless you move up there. But what about dall? And everybody looks at going to Alaska for that. Is there an opportunity for folks like myself that to come up there to do it on a state salary? Obviously we save our pennies for a hunt like that, but what's the opportunity like for non-citizens?
Well, I mean, I think that it's the age old question is how bad do you want it? Right.
Exactly.
And you know, have you got, it's one of those things on a state salary. The reality is that it's, you're going to have to save for years and years and you need to get your, and the way it is now, like, yeah, sheep hunting has become this. I think that it always has been a rich man's game, but it's just becoming further and further out of reach. As hunting, the more pressure on hunting and the, you know, the numbers, the fewer tags there is, and it just becomes more sought after and the price just goes up, and COVID has not made that any better. Like the prices have just went way up since then, because years of people that, you know, were on, it was on their bucket list. Now they've been pushed out years and a, you know, a couple of years more. So yeah, I don't see sheep hunting ever getting cheaper. That's for sure. It's unfortunate that, because it is such an amazing experience. But I would, you know, I would probably say if sheep hunting wasn't something that, you know, a person wanted to save for, I think a fantastic hunt in similar conditions is goat hunting, and much more affordable. And it's, you know, almost every bit is as fun. I love goat hunting, and that just that whole sheep thing, it's really, really challenging.
I did get to shoot a goat in Colorado and had an amazing experience. Absolutely amazing experience. That's the picture on my screen there of my goat hunt, and just a unbelievable experience. I absolutely loved it, and I'm going to do it again. I know, and that is not a difficult tag to draw in Colorado. I mean, it is, but it's not like a hard. It's not a bighorn tag,
right?
And my buddy told me the other day, he's like, quit putting in for Colorado, quit dropping your $100 for a point. And I was like, that means I'll never do it. It's like, right. I'm guaranteeing, right, I'll never do it. I know, yeah, there's a very slight chance that I'll be able to do it, but I got to keep trying. I just got to do it. And I think more for me above the sheep, because I have no... It is really just the wonder, I guess, with that one. I don't, make me an odd man out. I don't have this burning desire that I'm going to go drop my 20 grand on a adult sheep. I am really interested in moose. Absolutely moose. Or goat. Doing a goat hunt again in Colorado. Or a Yukon or Alaskan moose. That interests me. There's something about that ginormous animal, and when it's close enough that I just can't help but not miss. I can't miss.
Thanks, you. Yeah, you know what? Well, that's. I think that's a great, you know, aspiration, because you've had the mountain hunt in the goat hunt, right? And it's not out of the realm to be able to do that again. Now, you know, the $25,000 to $30,000 that you have to drop on a doll sheep hunt nowadays, you know, you're not that different from me. Like, I don't have this burning desire to go and get a desert or a bighorn. Like, I love the Yukon, and I love hunting right here, and I get all the satisfaction I need from that. And I don't need to have, you know, even if I could afford it, I don't see myself at this point that needing to pay $70,000 for a hunt that I know is not going to be half the experience of the ones that I've had. Right.
Right.
So to your point of the moose, moose hunting is like one of my favorite things to do every year. Like, sheep is number one, moose is number two. It absolutely is. It's an experience. And like you started to paint the picture of, you know, these massive animals, you know, coming through the, you know, through the timber or along the riverbank, you know, after they've been calling them and they're, full into the rut, and their eyes are rolled in the back of their head, and they're swaying those massive horns, and they're just coming in. It's something to be, you know, to be seen, or, you know, watching two big bulls fight, or, you know, it's, and the time of the year is spectacular because all the colors are out, and yeah, it's a magical experience. I believe, and moose hunting is absolutely, do it. If I can't say it enough, do it.
Yeah. Well, I had to start another business or a business when I went to a little different salary, a little lower one, and to offset that. So that's where the, it funds my hunting is really, yeah, what that business does. So I'll be, it's been off the list for a little while, 'cause I've had so many other Western hunting experiences here, and from Colorado to looking at expanding to Montana and doing this and that, that I really should start a little savings account there for the moose, and just keep that there as something, maybe as a goal I do before I'm 50.
Yeah. Well, you've got lots of time, but, you keep this, you keep the hunting thing going, and who knows, maybe somebody wants you to come and hunt with them for nothing.
Yeah. That sounds great.
or, you have, you put your name in for the lottery, right?
Exactly. Yeah. No,
I even have a better one for you. So as an American, you can go to Alaska and you can self-guide a moose hunt.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yep. I knew, so, it's just, I mean, not sheep,
it's not
and
that
goat.
Far. It's not that far out of the realm. You can get your moose hunt in Alaska, and you got some great places to hunt there. So if you're going to do that, just give me a shout. I'll give you some tips on where to go.
There we go. Yeah. I've got this burning desire to do it with a bow, only for the sake of the close range, and having that giant animal. I know we were talking about getting over some fears, but not gonna lie, a grizzly bear is a pretty deep fear. Brown bears, it's a pretty deep fear, because it's an unknown. And we don't have them in South Dakota. Historically, yes, they're not here anymore. Lewis and Clark ran into them all the time, but they're so high on my list, and I already got my gun ready to go for it. but it's something I could get over for that experience gladly, and go face that fear and have a good hunt. So when I look at it with wanting to do with a bow versus a rifle, am I on track to having an awesome hunt, or do you have any suggestions there?
Oh no, I think hunting moose with the bow is just an unbelievable experience. Depending on the timing and season, how my hunting season has gone, I try to take an animal with the bow every year since producing the television show. And generally speaking, it's a moose. So it's a fantastic experience getting up close to them, and, you know, grunting and just the whole, I would absolutely do it with a bow if you can. They're one of those animals that, when you call them in, they will close that distance and really provide you a great opportunity to make that happen. And it's a big target.
Yeah. 'Cause I fall apart when I'm in front of a big animal or a little animal. I just had an old timer, and he had to be 80 years old, and probably right now he's 85. I don't know. He had told me that once, and it just had stuck, that he said his best experiences ever as a hunter, as a bow hunter, have been hunting moose, and something that just the excitement and the thrill of a giant animal and the response you get. That's why people love elk hunting. That's why they like turkey hunting. They like anything you call in, duck hunting. You're getting to interact and talk with an animal, and to interact and talk to an animal that is that large, with that kind of movement of swaying back and forth, is just something I look forward to. I think it'd be amazing. Yeah.
Well, just listening to you, I think you're hooked and you're making me want to wish it was September. So,
Yeah. And well, because we were dealing with some tech issues, we'll kind of wrap it up here a little bit. But my next challenge is figuring out what my kids hunt are. And I think it has been my challenge over the last month because I've been guiding turkey hunters and my boy's been saying, when are we going? When are we going? And what are this fall? And he says, we got to go to the tag store, to buy our tags. And that we saw some nice whitetail out the window the other day. And he was confused as to why we couldn't hunt them. It's like, well, we don't shoot everything we see and we don't need to. And it's not hunting season. So we have those conversations. And So now I'm tasked with this. Okay. What's my hunt that I'm taking him on this fall? But I think based on what you said, it's any one of my hunts I had planned. I could do any one of them. I'm not doing anything crazy this year. And even if I was, who knows? There's why not? So there's no reason why he couldn't come right along with me. And for those listeners, as long as you're prepared, go for it. I think that's some really sound advice and good parenting advice to be able to not be a helicopter parent and let your kid be a kid.
Yeah, no, that's about as good as it gets right there.
Well, if you wouldn't mind, just if people want to watch and see the content you put out, where are we going to find it?
Yeah, well, first off, before we take off and along the vein of moose hunting is that myself and a number of my partners, which are, you know, Gunworks, Kuyu, Vortex, Really Right Stuff, we're teamed up with an outfitter here, and we are giving away a moose hunt for 2023.
I saw that.
So, yeah. So,
I think I signed up. Pretty sure I did.
Did you? Great, yep. Great. Because that's an opportunity for just an amazing prize package. I think that the value of the hunt is somewhere around $50,000, and somebody's going to win it. And it's not a matter of, you know, you don't have to pay $100 ticket or anything. You just get your name in, and if you spread it with your friends, you know, you get your name in more times. So it's kind of a pyramid effect. But you just sign up at www.moosehuntgiveaway.com, and it's going to be a blast. I'm going to guide, and we're going to be in the Yukon Stone outfitting area, which is a great area. I've hunted moose in there a lot over the years. So it's going to be a great experience mid-September up here in the Yukon. Somebody's going to win it. So
is that for 2023?
Yeah, 2023.
Perfect.
So there's lots of time to prepare. And whoever wins this is going to be, we're going to have a blast. That's for sure.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, as far as where people can check me out, I get like the show and stuff. If you haven't seen it, we are on Sportsman Channel. We're on, you know, Waypoint, obviously Waypoint TV, Carbon TV. And you can catch some of the older stuff at, on YouTube as well. So it's just Greg McHale's Wild Yukon. That goes for everything, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. So yeah, okay. I really appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate your listeners. So if you're listening to Clint, thank you very much. And it has been great talking to you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, sir.
All right. Have a great evening.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.